This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Marianne Faithful. She has a new CD called Before the Poison. Before we get back to the interview I recorded with her a few days ago, we're going to hear an excerpt of the conversation we had in 1994, after the publication of her autobiography. It told about her music career and the heroin addiction that nearly killed her. She wrote that when she was in rehab in 1985, as part of the therapy process, each person was expected to tell his or her story. That's when she realized there was a blank in her life. She had a sense of being part of the Rolling Stones scene when she and Mick Jagger were lovers in the 60s, but she had no idea what her own story was.
I think that's one of the saddest things in the book, that bit where I'm in Hazelden and they asked me to tell my story, and I actually rang Ellen Smith, my publicist, and said to her, please send me up and down with the Rolling Stones because they want my story.
Which was a book about the Stones.
Yes. That's what that is sort of very telling, you know.
What led to that feeling that you didn't know what your
Well, I didn't know
was?
When I said that I didn't have a story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still thought that my story was the same story as the Rolling Stones. I didn't figure this out for another year. I'm very slow.
So tell us the story of how you met Mick Jagger.
Well, I went along to a party with my first boyfriend, John Dunbar, who was a friend of Peter and Gordon. And Paul McCartney was going out with Jane Asher. It's so hard to remember all these things. And somehow, John was always up for a party. And especially then, when we were very young. I mean, I was 17. And he must have been 19, you know, 19, 20, no more. But, you know, it was just a party. But it was a dead glam party, I suppose, even for London. And it was a lot of fun, I suppose, yes. I mean, it's somewhat sort of coloured in my imagination now by the fact that I was discovered there. But...
What do you mean you were discovered there?
I was just... Well, that's where Andrew Oldham saw me. I was discovered by several people at that party, actually. Andrew Oldham is the only person I gave my address to.
And he was the producer of your first records,
yes,
and of the Rolling Stones.
Yes, he managed the Rolling Stones, made their early records.
Now, what did he discover in you? Was it your look, or did he know that you sang?
No, he didn't know I sang. Now, that was just a sort of bit of luck, I think.
In your memoir, you reprint a press release that was written for when As Tears Go By was released. And it says, Marianne Faithful is the little 17-year-old blonde who still attends a convent in Reading, daughter of the Baroness Orisso. She is lissome and lovely with long blonde hair.
Lots of alliteration in this press release,
yeah.
Isn't there?
Yes. A shy smile and a liking for people who are long-haired and socially conscious. Marianne digs Marlon Brando, Woodbine cigarettes, poetry, going to the ballet, and wearing long evening dresses. She is shy, wistful, waif-like. Now, what did you think of that image of yourself?
I thought it was a hoot. I remember taking it back to my mum and sitting in Milman Road reading it to my mother and Chris, my brother. We just fell about laughing, you know. I never in my wildest dreams thought that people would think I was like that. Although I did dig Marlon Brando. That's true. And I was at a convent. And my mother was a baroness. But apart from that... But then again... You know, I can't be too sort of sticky about this because it's quite obvious that we none of us really see ourselves as others see us.
Now you ended up doing a lot of drugs, doing a lot of heroin. How did you start doing heroin?
I used it as a coping mechanism, I think.
For coping with what?
For coping with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked for a while, but it did have a tremendous drawback, which was that it was addictive and it would kill you.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
Ages. Very long time. But I did figure it out eventually, thank God.
Now, I want to play a song that you wrote the lyrics for called Sister Morphine.
Mm.
That was released in England in 1969. Tell me a little bit about where you were in your life when you wrote the song and what the lyrics are about.
I don't know. It's a very weird thing about Sister Morphine because, you know, it was knocking about the house for 6 months. Mick was playing it all the time.
Playing the melody.
Playing the, yes, the basic thing. Da, 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 that thing all the time. So it went into my sort of whole sort of nervous system, blood, bones, whatever, everything. I really had it in my I knew it by heart, let's say that anyway. And then I remember it, and I'm sure Mick does too. It was very peculiar. I just sat down, picked up a legal pad and a pencil, and wrote it out, you know. And there it was. But I do that sometimes. It's obvious. I work on it in my head. And then when it's all ready, I do it.
Why don't we hear Sister Morphine? This is Marian Faithful, recorded in 1969. Marian Faithful is my guest, and she's written an autobiography called Faithful. The record company, Decca, you say yanked this record about 2 days after it was released.
They took it off the shelves.
What was their objection?
Well, there were many. The lyrics were very ahead of their time. It's one thing for Lou Reed to sing heroin, obviously. It was completely... This is something I really didn't understand, that this thing about me being this beautiful little angel was real. I never really believed that. I couldn't believe it. So I suppose for Decca, you know, the last thing they put out by Marian Faithful, I can't remember what it was Summer Nights, say. I think it was. That was in 1965. And then in 1969, they're given Sister Morphine. And they couldn't handle it.
You said that after you became a junkie that it actually brought you anonymity that you hadn't known since you were 16, since 17, that is. You were living on the street. I'm sure that wasn't exactly, though, the kind of anonymity that you wanted.
Well, I hadn't wanted celebrity in the first place. I just went to a party and got discovered. And I hadn't had time to think about whether I wanted it or not. So the anonymity I got in the street was very valuable to me.
Where were you living? How did you live during those years?
Well, I lived on a wall. I lived on a wall in Soho. And it was an amazing time for me. When I really couldn't take it, I could always go back to my mother's. You know, it wasn't like I had nothing. I wasn't exactly the same as the street people. But they didn't mind that.
Marian Faithful, recorded in 1994.